Despite the increasing numbers of children diagnosed with ADHD, the cause is still unknown and debate rages over what the best course of treatment is. In his new memoir, Hyper, A Personal History of ADHD, Timothy Denevi uses his own struggle with ADHD as a springboard to explore the origins and history of this controversial disease, marking the first time that a book on ADHD has been written from the perspective of someone who has actually experienced it. It's a great pleasure to welcome Timothy Denevi to the program. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me on, Joe.
It's very nice to have you here and talking about this particular issue. It seems weird using the phrase controversial disease.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. It's one of the most studied childhood disorders out there. And over the last 100 years, a lot of really smart people have worked really hard to try to figure out exactly what's going on when it comes to the range of behaviors that we now refer to as ADHD.
Some of the numbers that we have, 11% of children 4 to 17 of age have been diagnosed with ADHD as of 2011. The prevalence of children 4 to 17 years of age taking ADHD medication has increased from 4.8% in 2007 to 6.1%. in 2011. So, and we are told that the numbers continue to increase. So what should we make of those statistics?
I would answer that in two ways. One, it's a really hard issue to diagnose because we're talking about a borderline category of functioning. And by that I mean the disadvantages we see with ADHD aren't that far off of the normal spectrum of functioning. There's a very good doctor who's done a lot of research on ADHD, Xavier Castellanos, and what he says is people with ADHD can do just about anything. They just don't do it so well. And so as a result, when you're dealing right at the border of normal functioning, you often see a difficulty in identifying exactly where the harms and the symptoms begin and where normal functioning ends. That being said, one of the main issues we've seen over the past 20 years has to do with our healthcare system, where instead of going to somebody who is perhaps a psychiatrist and has seen a lot of patients with ADHD and has spent a lot of time studying it, you get a 10 to 15 minute interview with your pediatrician. And suddenly, within one specific environment, maybe at the end of the day at a doctor's office, that health professional is going to have to look at the evidence at hand and make a judgment that what we would see now from the literature should really be made in a multimodal assessment. And by that, I mean by looking at how the child behaves in many different environments before deciding if, in fact, the overactivity or the inattention or the impulsivity is to a degree that it's very different than the way other kids act and is also causing a lot of harm.
So you're 6 years old in the 1980s, and you were prescribed Ritalin for being hyperactive. How quick do you feel that that diagnosis was made?
I was lucky because my mother wanted to get help, but she was also suspicious of quick answers. And so we had a step-by-step process to do it, but what happened with what we would say the quickness of the diagnosis that I experienced was that there was no leeway in the diagnosis. And so we went to a pediatrician, then we went to a psychiatrist. He was an older psychiatrist. He still referred to ADHD as its older term that had to do with brain damage, MBD. And he just dismissed my mother's call for individuality in my case. I hadn't responded to other drugs well, something as simple as Benadryl. She has never responded to drugs well, and it really got to one of the larger issues with ADHD is that we're talking about something that arrests itself at the border of personality and biology. And it's not as simple as treating a bacteria or a virus. And my mother went in and talked to these health professionals, and they basically dismissed her and didn't listen to any of her pleas. And then I ended up having a very bad reaction to what was probably too large of a dose of Ritalin for me at that time. And it's that lack of individuality in the treatment that I experienced and that my mother experienced that has become one of the major issues with ADHD going forward. Either children are totally being fit into a biological framework where it's like asthma and they need to be treated, or conversely, it doesn't exist at all and there are ideological arguments being made about how we're pathologizing normal behavior and what have you. There's no individual leeway in the cultural discussion and sometimes even in its treatment to see the child as an individual who will respond to these different courses of evidence-based treatment and diagnoses in very, very different ways.
I think one of the things that struck me in reading the book is that your reaction to Ritalin was a psychotic reaction. And what it tells me, and what I have seen through children that I've known on Ritalin, that this is a severe drug.
The goal with a Ritalin dose or an Adderall dose is to have the lowest dose possible, so that it almost isn't working where it is working, if that makes sense.
Yes.
Is to have the dose be right at the level where it's helping, because what it does is it makes things closer in certain situations. If you can't help with the environmental factors going on, maybe a stimulant could help to get the child through to the next phase of their development that they need to. And, you know, it's not my place to judge yes or no on either of that, and the evidence supports it. But the problem is, if it says treat all children with 20 milligrams of Ritalin if they're this age, or 10 milligrams if they're this weight, not all children are going to respond that way, because we're not talking, again, about something like an antibiotic. We're talking about something that's probably addressing the most complex aspect of our consciousness, you know, which is where our awareness and where our biology come together. ADHD is incredibly heritable, and by that I mean it has organic roots. It can be greatly exaggerated by the environment around you and the harms that it causes, like overactivity and the way people respond to you, that can get much worse. But over the last 100 years, the research tends to show that it can't be created out of thin air. And so it's rooted at a very deep source in, you know, human consciousness and in who we are. And these drugs are getting down toward that source. And not everybody's going to respond to them in the same way. And the dosaging is really, really important.
So for you, it was Ritalin, it was antidepressants, it was behavior therapy, it was a liquid diet, it was all kinds of therapy combined with medication. And at what point do you feel that the correct balance was reached?
And that's a really good question. I would say that the behavior therapy helped immensely when I was in first to fourth grade. The behavior therapy focused not on the primary symptoms, not being able to sit in your seat, not being able to keep your mouth shut, you know, when the teacher's speaking, focusing. It didn't address that. What it really addressed was how I deal with the way said ADHD-like behaviors affect everybody around me and upset them. So I was constantly realizing that everybody was angry with me, but it was as if I would come to in my body. I would suddenly understand the way I disturbed the world, but I hadn't been aware of my disturbance of it. And so the behavior therapy with a really fantastic and brilliant psychologist who's still a friend of our family really focused on the way that other people get mad at me and how I can work on not reacting to that. It didn't always work. It wasn't great, but I enjoyed that secondary aspect of the symptoms. And later, you know, when I got older, when you're an adult, what you have is an incredible amount of agency. And so now I can exercise 6 days a week. I can work a job that doesn't demand I be somewhere I'm lucky enough, you know, 9 to 5 p.m. I have much more maneuverability in my environment, which is really, in my case, the best way to address these issues.
It seems, and I'm curious as to this in reading the book, it is entitled Hyper. You seem hyper aware, acutely aware, of where you were at any given point in your childhood, to a degree that I'm not sure I would be of looking back. And do you think it's because of the ADHD, or meaning that you were going through that and you were told, or is that upon reflection?
A good point. I think that in any good narrative form, conflict and difference are engines for self-awareness. And so if you realize that you're not fitting in with everyone around you, one of the responses to that is to ask why, you know, and it's to ask why and why again over many years. And I've always been trying to use self-awareness as a way to keep myself from acting in ways that were disturbing everyone around me. And what I found is that there'd be this terrible gap where I could get aware, I can make good environmental decisions, I could try to avoid doing it, and nevertheless, things would happen. And so I was already working to be very self-aware just as a way of normal functioning when I was a child. And even though all of these, I was surrounded by conflict and difficulty, and it was a really hard path, one of the things that did come out of it is a sense of understanding my place in relation to everyone else via the conflict and difficulty my path caused. And that self-awareness has been very vital now as an adult, looking back to recreate and retell the story that I once experienced.
So is it possible for you to look back on your childhood with some fondness, or is it with this degree of, not concern exactly, but the unfortunate reality of what you were dealing with?
It's a mixed bag. I would say I have incredible fondness for my parents and for family members that were loving and supportive all the way through these difficult times. And I have fondness of memories with them, you know, as most of us would. You know, I would quote the Steely Dan song that I'm never going back to my old school, and I don't have much fondness for some of the educational experiences I went through. But I have incredible fondness for the people that helped me when I was having a really difficult time. And I just remember the appearance of certain adults and other children that didn't have to offer the generosity they did. One example would be Betty Parsons, my third grade teacher, but nevertheless saw a good version of me, saw a better version of me than perhaps I was even showing everyone else. And, you know, offered, it's almost like grace, a sense of generosity that helped me move forward that I'm very thankful for now and that I do look back on fondly.
Timothy Denevi is our guest. We're talking about his book, Hyper, A Personal History of ADHD. You write about your maturity and becoming an adolescent and then an adult, and how you change with this. And so give us a sense of the maturity and dealing with ADHD and ultimately coming to terms with it as an adult and wanting to write about it.
That's a good question, too. One thing about being an adult with ADHD is that the main symptoms tend to diminish. They don't disappear. Other symptoms become more prevalent. But the overactivity that very much defined my childhood naturally diminishes. I still may be more overactive compared to other people in their 30s than now, but that's not that overactive. You know, ADHD is an age-based situation. And so I'm lucky that, for whatever reason, I'm not as exaggerated among everybody else now as I once was. That being said, eventually, if you keep having this conflict over and over and over again, one thing I've learned is making good environmental decisions. As my father would have said to me when I was very young, don't put yourself in that position to begin with, has helped now in terms of navigation. That could be choosing, you know, a routine, which is very helpful, choosing to be around people that don't exaggerate the worst qualities of you, and most of all, just choosing to look out and see those very specific situations in which you know you're going to have difficulty, and either trying to avoid them altogether if you can, or if you can't, because not everybody has that privilege or situation, going into them being aware that this is a difficult situation, and this is a situation in the past you can remember very clearly has caused problems. I would think of a morning lecture or a job talk, like if you have to go and do an orientation for your job session and sit for 6 hours and listen to speech after speech after speech, that's still very difficult for me to do. And that's still a place where conflict will arise sometimes for me without my knowledge. But knowing that as an adult does help, especially when if perhaps I'm tapping my foot or whispering to somebody next to me, even as an adult during a speech, and somebody turns around in front of me and just screams at me, basically for talking during this health, you know, benefit speech that we're all listening to at the university, I cannot react back to it the way that I would as a child, because the awareness, again, and having gone through it before, is very helpful in navigating forward.
And does it change the passages that we inevitably all go through in life? You write in the book about getting drunk for the first time, of how different and severe that was for you versus most people.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. When you're at a point of difference and you're aware of it, you do pass through some of those things differently. I mean, being drunk at a bar is like being surrounded by, you know, people that are acting in a ADHD-esque manner. It's loud, it's short on memory, it's excitable. And when you come into that for the first time, and the very first moment you experience that party as a child, and suddenly everybody's acting in the way you've been told not to for most of your life, I mean, that was like passing through a door I'd never seen. It's difficult with ADHD and drinking. Most of the research will show that addiction's a different path, and whatever leads to full-blown addiction, it's a different way to get there. ADHD won't cause that. But if you're impulsive, then something like binge drinking or excessiveness can be a problem too. And so to answer that question in two parts, it does seem different when you enter it, but also it can be a little bit more dangerous, especially if you have problems in terms of excess and impulsivity. I mean, in the book, it's just I drink, you know, basically a bottle of whiskey, which, you know, many people have done in their lives, but I drink it all in two gulps. And just in that quick impulsivity, suddenly there's no going back from that. And that was just really a minute or two, you know, without thinking.
So where are you now in the sense of dealing with ADHD and how you control it?
That's a good question, too. Adulthood's a different space. Again, you have so much more agency. I get to play tennis 6 days a week. I mean, what's more privileged than that? And after I do that, I feel as if I've burned off the restlessness, which is one of the things that still remains. Again, I get to work a job in which I have a lot of work to do compared to any other job, but I can do it at a coffee shop or at home, you know, or later at night after my son goes to bed. And most of all, I have a calm scientist wife who offers another view on the world that's very different from my own. And in our, you know, 15 years together, I've been able to see how everybody's acting around me through her eyes as well as mine, which has given me a better perspective. So all of these different environmental changes has helped. And in addition to that, in the last 3 or 4 years, I did start to take a low daily dosage of Adderall, which is amphetamine salts. I try to take it as an instant release form instead of the daily extended release form. And I try to look ahead of time, knowing a situation I have a lot of trouble with. Like if I have to take my son to a birthday party at an ice rink, that's going to be just crazy. And I'm going to be worried about his safety the whole time. And I would get really upset and freak out in that situation in the past, you know, or get overwhelmed. Or it would be very difficult. If I do take the Adderall ahead of time for that, it helps. Driving is still very difficult for me, especially in traffic. I get so impatient and so crazy, which is very dangerous, you know? Mm-hmm. That's a dangerous space. And so if I know I have to drive through terrible Washington, D.C. traffic, a place I've never been before, if I have to take a route I've never been on before, then taking the Adderall ahead of time for that, it really makes that a much safer and mostly less conflict-based experience. And that's the goal, is to find ways to improve your functioning and diminish the conflict without causing additional harms via the treatment itself.
Do you think ADHD defines you?
No, of course not. But I think that it was very specific to my childhood. And that's because I grew up in the 1980s, just after the DSM-3, when those sorts of behaviors weren't met with, you know, paddles from a principal, you know, or I didn't just drop out of school and go into working. You know, many of my relatives are athletes. You know, I didn't just drop out and become, you know, work at a health club or do something like that. Like, I stayed within the school system, but my difference and my issues that were kind of would be pushing me out of the school system were addressed in a medical sense. And so I don't think it defines me at all now. I would like to think trying to be a storyteller and make good art is one of the self-definitions that I applied. Mm. But in addition to that, my childhood is inextricably tied to it simply because at that time and place in American history, the end of the 20th century, those specific aspects of conflict and functioning began to be seen and treated in this medical light for really the very first time on a wide scale.
And then there's the genetics. You talked about, you know, what you were able to take, very similar to what your mother was able to take as far as medication goes. So do you watch your son more closely, perhaps, than the average parent would?
Yeah, I mean, before he was born, I was worried about it. It's something I thought about, you know. But now that he's 7, I can see that he has his own personality. And for whatever reason, again, I'm married to a very calm, very smart woman who's a planetary geologist or planetary scientist. Because of that, and for whatever reason, my son is, he's not overactive. You know, he's a boy. He's active. But compared to every other boy his age, he's not overactive at all. And really, it's nothing like behaviorally. What I see in him is nothing like what I experienced. But that being said, I still try with my wife to respond to him in ways that are calm and considerate and don't model excessive behavior. You know, I don't try to act impulsively around him. When I'm driving and somebody cuts me off, I have to bite my fist, but I won't respond and yell back at that person because he hasn't even seen impulsive behavior like that in adults necessarily or hasn't noticed it. And even though you can't create ADHD, I don't want to model for him those behaviors that were so prevalent in my past, in my life. I want to give him a different example forward. And a lot of that has to do with patience. And a lot of that is helped by having a wife who's patient too.
This gets back, as we wrap up, to the issue of self-awareness, because you can identify that impulsive behavior. Not everyone with ADHD can do that.
I'm very lucky. The thing about ADHD, everybody's like, does it exist? Does it not? Is everybody over-medicated? Is everybody over-diagnosed? Those are actually fair questions, the last two. But one of the main issues with ADHD is a lot of people don't make it into the present. A lot of people with ADHD have a much lower life expectancy. You end up not functioning all the way through life. You fall out of the normal path, and suddenly you're lost in your 20s, 30s, or 40s. And I've seen this in family members of mine, and you don't know why. And so the self-awareness has very much helped. But what has helped the most is being able to get to adulthood, because I was privileged enough to have family that was looking after me in such a to such an extent, and also to have really excellent medical and general educational opportunities. And as a result, I made it. And then once you make it, you can look back. But you got to make it first before you get a chance to look back and have that reflection.
The name of the book is Hyper, A Personal History of ADHD. It is published by Simon & Schuster. Timothy Denevi, thank you very much for being with us, and thank you for sharing your story. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me, Joe.
Appreciate it. Again, the title of the book is Hyper, A Personal History of ADHD. It's published by Simon & Schuster. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.